From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Driving from Canada to Mexico is a rather epic journey that requires a good deal of planning and thought. Now imagine biking that same route. Now imagine biking that same route while trying to break the speed record. Well, Tanner Ferris, a math teacher at Kelly Middle School, isn't imagining it, he's doing it this summer. Today on the show, you'll hear from Ferris and hear how he plans to make this trek while battling sleep deprivation, brutal heat and cold, and crazy California traffic. He also wants to set an example for his students about overcoming obstacles. Then, we'll finish the show by talking to one of our reporters about a new bike program in town to help those living in shelters learn bike maintenance skills. That's next on Oregon on the Record. When most of us hear the term athlete, we probably think about football players or track athletes performing before thousands of screaming fans at Autzen Stadium or Hayward Field. But today, you'll hear from another kind of athlete, someone who attempts something truly miraculous when no one is watching. Tanner Ferris is trying to break the speed record biking from Canada to Mexico, and he'll be doing it largely on his own. Tanner Ferris, a middle school math teacher at Kelly Middle School. Tanner, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
I appreciate you, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah. So you're setting out to break the record for cycling from Canada to Mexico. First question is, why did you want to take on this challenge?
You know, I'm a weirdo like that. I really enjoy doing things that push me as far as I can possibly go. And then even beyond that, I've found that as I've ridden further and further, there's always a little bit more in the tank, and I'm just curious to see where that limit is. I've loved riding my bike. I grew up out in Elmira, and so it was natural that I had to ride really far to get anywhere. And so I've been riding far since I was a kid. I got into bike touring in college, and then eventually I started riding these ultra distance bike packing races just a few years ago. And I just found that I have a propensity for suffering to be able to be on a saddle any longer than or longer than anyone should possibly be.
Well, I have to ask, what has been your longest bike trip thus far?
Yeah, so in terms of races, I participated in a race called Northwest Nonstop. It's organized by a guy out of Portland who runs a group called Ride Your Bike. And it was from Bellingham, Washington to Davis, California. That's 1,100 miles. Wow. And so I won that race back in 2023. I did it in just over 6 days. And then I knew I could do a little bit better. So I tried it again in 2025, and I won it in 5 days and 6 hours.
Wow.
Apart from that, one-day rides, I did a ride from here to Seattle in under 24 hours. Nobody's told me that they've done it faster than that, so I'm kind of hanging on to that as the fastest known time right now from Eugene to Seattle on a bike nonstop. And then I've done a few more around the valley where just no sleep, kind of 400-mile rides and here and there.
That sounds amazing. You know, you're a teacher. You teach kids. Is there kind of, I don't know, a message or just something you kind of hope that they take from this when they, you know, I imagine you've talked to them about it, and you'll certainly talk to them about it when you finish, you know, kind of, is there something that you kind of want to impart to them?
Yeah, certainly, you know, on top of showing them again that there's always a little bit more than they can give, even when they feel like they're tapped out on their ability to produce in class or to be able to work and be successful. I also want to show them that they don't always have to try to be the best. They just have to give me their hardest effort. Hmm. That's a quote from my favorite ultra endurance cyclist. Her name's Lale Wilcox. She said that I'm not always looking to be the best, but I am going to try my hardest every time. And so that's something I hope that they can take away from what I do.
Yeah. What is your route? I imagine there are several ways to do it, but have you kind of mapped out how you're going to, and I guess, are you riding southbound? Are you starting at the border between the U.S. and Canada and then riding south to the border between U.S. and Mexico?
Yeah, that's the idea. So I'll be starting in Blaine, Washington, the week right after we get out of school here. Blaine's right on the border to the last exit of I-5 you can take on the U.S. side.
Okay.
I'll be starting there, and then the plan is to head south to Seattle, and then through Portland, eventually end up in kind of Eugene Junction City before cutting to the coast, and then taking 101 all the way to San Diego from there. I'm kind of basing this on an attempt that was from 2024. So the guy who kind of legitimized this record, his name's Tyler Pierce. He goes by Vegan Cyclist on Instagram. Hmm. He did it in 9 days and 13 hours. Took to the coast a little bit earlier than I did. He was going for the outright fastest Canada to Mexico and didn't really have any criteria. So I'm kind of taking the same adventure spirit and saying, hey, if I can make a route that does it faster, can I make it quicker than him? And so that's why I'm really looking forward to getting to Eugene to be able to shout out some of the people that have supported me to even get this far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, talk about just maybe some of the logistics in terms of, do you have in mind, you know, what your average daily mileage needs to be to make this happen?
Yeah, when I am racing, in the times I've done that previously, it's a lot of times I'm looking where other people are, and that's helping me set a pace of like, hey, I want to stay ahead. And my philosophy there is like, even if that means not sleeping through the night, just riding all night long so I can just keep that lead. I got to be a little bit more strategic this time because it's going to be looking like about 9 days, and I need to be able to pace myself in a way where I'm getting some meaningful sleep every night and some recovery time. And so I'm looking at about 200 miles a day, which I hope turns into no more than 15 or 16 hours on the bike.
Okay.
So I can get at least 5 hours in bed and a little bit of a rest period before picking it up the next day.
Wow. You know, in addition to those physical challenges, what do you think is going to be the hardest thing for you to overcome?
You know, on top of that, just being away from my family for that long. We've got two young kiddos at home, my partner and I, a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. Mm. And as they've gotten older and become more independent, it's been nice to be able to know that my partner's always been supportive of me getting out there and doing these races. But I feel better and better as they're able to take care of themselves a little bit more and know that they're going to be okay at home as they go on these increasingly longer rides. And so it's going to be tough not seeing him. So I hope I can sneak a kiss in when I come through here. And then I'm really looking forward to my partner, MJ, who's also a teacher in 4J, is going to be flying down to San Diego to come see me at the finish line there.
Nice, nice. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Tanner Ferris. He's a middle school math teacher at Kelly Middle School, and he's going to be riding from Canada to Mexico trying to break the record. How do you deal with sleep deprivation? I know you said you're going to try and get sleep, but obviously not what a normal person would get. How do you deal with that?
You know what I found works really well, Mike, was I love to sing really loud. When I get tired and I feel like I'm starting to doze off on the bike, I'll just start thinking of my favorite songs. I'll become my own jukebox out there. I try to strategically place the caffeine where it's going to help me out the best, but singing really loud, squeezing my hands really tight, anything that I can do to kind of get animated. You know, what else I found is that if you really need to, just go ahead and take that nap. It's you're going to be a lot better off and a lot safer if you close your eyes just for 15 minutes to kind of reset the brain for a second rather than trying to ride through drowsy.
Sure, sure. Anytime you ride a bike, and certainly in the route you describe, you're going to be, you know, on some heavily driven highways. Talk a little bit about sort of, do you have concern for your safety with regard to, you know, getting hit by a car or something like that?
Yeah, certainly every time I go out, that's something that goes through my mind. I've known too many people who have, unfortunately been involved in accidents and life altering or life ending ones. I try to get as visible as I can on the bike. I have as many blinky lights as I can fit on. I'm always trying to wear high visibility clothing. I use a bike radar actually that gives me notifications on my bike computer to how fast cars are coming up behind me and how many. I'll be using mirrors. But even with all that, you just can't control other people out there. And so It's a concern, and it's something I think about a lot, and it's a risk that I take doing something that I love. And I'm glad I have the support from my partner to be able to get out there and do that.
Yeah. Speaking of support, is somebody, do you have like a support vehicle or other folks that are going to sort of meet you along the course and ride with you to provide whatever relief you might need? Not from the bike, but just food and those sorts of things. Talk about that.
Yeah. So the way I am doing this is technically what they call self-supported. Unsupported would be if I didn't talk to anyone along the way. I didn't even receive if somebody was standing on the side of the road that was knowing I was coming by and just, offering me water. But what I'm really trying to do, and again, I'm taking this page from my favorite ultra endurance cyclist, Lil Wilcox. She set a record to ride around the world just 2 years ago, and I was able to participate with her. She shared her location via GPS and invited anybody along the way to come out and ride with her a little bit to keep her company, to be able to share their stories. And so really what I'm hoping to do is involve the community in this as much as possible. Besides the preparation, to let people know that when I'm out there, they're welcome to come see me. They're welcome to come and ride for a little bit. And I want to just see as many people on bikes as I can along the way. I'm really looking forward to seeing friends I haven't for a while that have mentioned that have reached out and said, hey, we're going to be in California at this time. And we'd love to come out and at least wave a sign or maybe pedal for a little bit. So it's really awesome to see how many people I can get involved in something that's normally a pretty solo activity.
Sure. Is there a section of this journey? This is a two-part question. Is there a section of the journey that you're most looking forward to? And then conversely, is there a stretch you're really kind of dreading that's going to be the hardest?
Yeah, I've been up and down the I-5 corridor from Bellingham to Eugene, and then I've been up and down 101. Just in March, I set the record for the fastest unsupported ride of the Oregon coast in 35 hours and 32 minutes. And so those are super familiar roads to me. That's where I feel like I'm going to make a lot of time on the front end. And I feel really good about that. California is a complete unknown. I know that the shoulders differ out there quite a bit. The traffic patterns differ quite a bit from what I'm used to. And it's a long stretch of 800 miles along the California coast. It's going to be completely new to me. I'm really looking forward to the Big Sur area. I know that just recently the highway was reconstructed there after being slid out for a few years. And so I'm excited to see that and get some fresh eyes on that part. I'm concerned about what I might see south of Malibu and navigating LA and Orange County. I've heard that can be kind of tricky, especially at busy times of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife's from that area. So yeah, absolutely. Couple more questions. I always love to ask, ultra endurance athletes this. How many calories do you consume on a daily basis? How much do you eat and drink while you're navigating this on a daily basis?
Yeah. While I'm out doing the big rides, I'm trying to put down about 400 calories an hour if I can. That comes in the form of 60, 70 grams of carbs if I can get them down. And it can be really a challenge for my digestive system to process that all at once to turn it back into energy. I'm still going to finish in a huge deficit every day between resting metabolism and active. It's eating a lot more than I can. And so, I try to put down a bottle of water just as often, about every hour or so, even more so in the summer when I'm trying to stay as hydrated as I can. So it can be a real challenge to get started in the morning too. And I often find myself drinking milk or something that's a little easier to go down. I don't have to chew. But a lot of that ends up being whatever I can find on the side of the road to gas station food, fast food, just, the quickest calories, the quickest way it goes down.
Tanner, I'm a runner, so I guess the only analogous thing I have is my shoes. But I'm wondering, as a biker who's going to be spending so much time there, is your bike more than just a piece of equipment to you?
Oh, all my bikes have names, Michael. I spend so much time with them. They all have their own personality. This bike actually named Misha after my best friend from high school, who was super fast. And so I love to go quick on this bike. It's got great shoes as well. I'm really fortunate to have the support of Rolf Prima. They build wheels, boutique wheels here in town. And I was able to partner with them as a grassroots ambassador to have an awesome set of their top end alloy wheels built. And so I'm really excited to get those mounted and see how they feel. But the bike's definitely it's a partner for me and more than just a bike.
Yeah. So Tana, my last question for you is this, you know, is there a message? I know you talked about the message for your kids, but I'm also wondering about being an endurance athlete. And like you said, you know, having to live with discomfort and pushing yourself. Is there a message that you have for people listening right now?
You can do anything for 1 minute. I've found that to be true throughout my life. And again, as I reach the limits or what I feel like are my discomfort, there's always a little bit more to give there. And there, again, in a sport that feels like it's so solo and isolating, like ultra endurance, where I'm putting in so many miles by myself, I know that it's only possible with the support of the community of people who have donated, who have been around me this whole way. I'm indebted to them. And I want to pass that on as well to my students that, again, they're never alone when they're working. They have a community of classmates. They have supportive adults in their life. There's people who want to see them be successful. They always have a little bit more to give, and they always have people around them that want to help them out.
All right. He's Tanner Ferris, a middle school math teacher at Kelly Middle School, and will be attempting to break the record on his bike from Canada to Mexico. Tanner, best of luck to you. Be safe. This is really exciting. And like I said, I wish you all the best.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate talking to you.
Macy Moore of our station joins us now to talk about a new bike program aimed at helping people get back on their feet. Macy Moore, the reporter with us here at KLCC. Thanks so much for coming in and talking.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
I really enjoyed your story about this program called Pedal Forward. What is it and what does it do?
So Pedal Forward is a program at primarily Shift Community Cycles in Eugene, which is like a bike shop and a repair space where you can get a used bike. And they do a bunch of community outreach, and they made this program collaborating with community supported shelters. Looking at some of the different shelters in Eugene, they picked out 8 candidates living in shelters who they thought would be a good fit to learn how to be bike mechanics. Hmm. And then those candidates worked with Shift or are working currently with Shift for 12 weeks to learn how to be bicycle mechanics. And they'll actually go work in the field with Shift Community Cycles in the summer when they do these like repair pop-ups. So they go to outdoor events in Eugene, like the Pride Festival or the Farmers Market, and will fix your bike for free.
Oh, nice.
And these candidates who are living in shelter will go and do that and get paid by Shift.
That's really cool. And in your story, you talked to some of the folks who were learning these skills. What were some of the things they told you?
My favorite, and the quote's in the story, but she was just a blast to talk to, was Delania Clarkson. And she talked about how learning to do something like this is really empowering, not just because like she rides bikes and loves bikes, so it's nice to know how to fix your own bike, but just the process of learning how to do something, having people around you supporting your learning is really empowering and reminds you that you can, it doesn't matter where you are in life, you can always go and learn something new and gain a new skill and do something that could benefit you.
Yeah. And then I think you also talked to sort of the person who started it and sort of kind of a happy accident. Talk about how they sort of came up with the idea.
Yeah. So Kenzie Channing, she's the executive director at Shift Community Cycles. And she kind of just had a interesting idea of training up some people who maybe aren't getting a lot of work opportunities in other places to be bike mechanics. And she's really wants Shift to be invested in the community in Eugene. So she's been going to a lot of other community spaces like shelters, like community supportive housing, mm-hmm. to check out what they're doing there, and just kind of brought it up randomly. And community supportive shelters has a workforce development program already, but they didn't really have anything in like a mechanical sphere. It's mostly work at the shelter, so you can do workforce development to do maintenance or cooking or cleaning or some other marketable skills, but a mechanic skill isn't something they could provide there. So the collaboration with Shift worked really well.
Yeah, that's really neat. And I guess some of the funding, talk about where that came from, because that was somewhat of an unusual source.
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce helped fund the program. They really liked this idea of creating this collaboration between different members of the community. And I think the Chamber of Commerce seems to have seen some value in creating sort of like a safe space for people who are living in shelters, dealing with being unhoused in Eugene, for them to go and learn these workforce skills. I think they saw a lot of value in that.
Yeah. And certainly in a community like Eugene, I mean, biking isn't just a fun thing to do. For many people, it is the only mode of transportation. So this kind of hooks into both the ethos of Eugene, but also provides some really critical skills, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was what everyone who I met who's in the program talked about was, I get around primarily on bikes. So even if this isn't a skill that's going to get me a job necessarily, it's still helpful for me to know it will benefit my day-to-day life. Because of course, the goal for workforce development program is to get you into the workforce. But Kenzie Channing said that she really likes seeing how empowered people are to fix their own means of transport, and that that will take them just as far as getting in a workforce program.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't mean to sound cheesy, but this is so much more than just learning how to fix a bike, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a really very kind, supportive environment. You could tell all of the people working there have just really gotten close with the participants, and the participants get to be friends with each other in the program. And it was just a really cool community. Definitely very inspiring.
Well, it was a great story. Macy Moore, reporter for us here at KLCC. Macy, thanks so much for coming in and chatting.
For sure. Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear about a local organization which advocates for people with disabilities trying to get into and stay in stable housing. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.